Chapter 21. Every space station has emergency system access points that aren't on any published blueprints, Bishop told Hicks. Only a few people in ops know about them. Makes sense. Hicks followed him through a long, narrow passageway that Bishop had referred to as one of the corridors less traveled. Since they generally had little traffic, surveillance activated only when sensors registered unusual activity, unauthorized weaponry, or anyone tagged with an arrest warrant. Unquote. The company only spends when it absolutely has to, Bishop continued. And this being a civilian station, even Colonel Rossetti might not know where the surveillance is spotty. Or he's just not saying, Hicks replied. In his experience, most high-ranking Marine officers didn't tell as much as they knew. At the end of the corridor, Bishop turned left into a shorter passageway cluttered with stepladders, toolboxes, and a few crates of light fixtures. It came out directly opposite the entrance to the tissue lab where the contamination incident had occurred. Bishop put a surveillance feed on Hicks's flexi and told him to keep watch. Let me know if you observe anyone coming our way. If they see you, when they see you. Tap this. He pointed at a white circle at the left edge of the screen. And start laughing.
Laughing? Hicks asked, bewildered.
For answer, Bishop touched the circle and the surveillance feed was replaced by an animated cartoon of a weird little duck having a temper tantrum. It's a classic. You can't beat the classics, Bishop said with a hint of a smile. Or so they tell me.
Very clever, Hicks said, chuckling. What do I say if they ask me why I'm hanging around here watching a cartoon duck with no paint?
Tell them you're working maintenance and you're waiting for someone to bring you the right parts, Bishop said. Hicks frowned.
You think they'll buy that?
They will if you're holding this. Bishop handed him a power screwdriver, then tapped the flexi again to bring up the surveillance feed.
And if someone comes along from your side? Hicks wanted to know.
I'll tell them I'm assisting maintenance, namely you, by checking on the connections in a lesser used area, Bishop said. Hicks couldn't resist.
What if it's someone from maintenance?
Bishop was unperturbed. Then I'm updating my structural engineering database. Or I brought you the wrong part because you weren't clear about what you needed, and now I'm making you wait while I double check everything. Now, go stand watch and don't forget to laugh. 4.5 meters from Hicks's position at the end of the corridor, Bishop scanned the wall with a flexi borrowed from operations. The flexi was a good piece of tech, better than what they usually had available. It gave him a true res image of the interior hardware. When he found the access point, he swiped upward on the flexi for the keypad and tapped in the code he'd found buried in the maintenance database. Then ran a fingertip down the center of the screen, splitting the display and adding the surveillance feed for Operations HQ. Chief Jackson appeared at a U-shaped console where a multitude of flat screens displayed either readouts scrolling slowly upward or surveillance feeds from various places around the space station. Every so often, she bobbed her head to use the laser pen clipped to her baseball cap. Bishop wondered why the motion didn't make her dizzy. Human engineers were a quirky breed, and the best ones were the quirkiest. It had something to do with their compulsion to customize interfaces. He had to tap into 4 of Jackson's screens before he found the feed from the tissue lab, which included sub-feeds from 4 different cameras and shifted every 5 seconds. Fortunately, they were all running on a single template, so he didn't have to coordinate each one separately, but it took several tries to roll back the timestamp on the tissue lab. It wouldn't hold past 190 seconds, but that would be long enough for them to do what they had to do, although probably not long enough to get away with it. He and Hicks would be facing serious consequences for what they were about to do, but what they'd face if they did nothing was so much worse. We have 3 minutes to do this, Bishop said. I managed to push it an extra 10 seconds on the off chance it's all we'd need to get away with it. Hicks nodded as Bishop entered an override code into the flexi strap on his forearm. The lab doors slid open and the smell of industrial-strength disinfectant hit him in the face, making him wince.
Word is, only a couple of tubes burst,
Hicks looked around nervously, following Bishop to the workbench.
What do you think they did with the other four?
Locked them down. Bishop pointed at a safe under the workbench. It was the kind of small, dense thing that looked as if it could withstand a supernova. And yes, he added as he tapped more numbers into his flexi, I can open it. Hicks stood aside and watched Bishop remove the cradle with four remaining tubes and set it on the workbench. Then he opened a panel on the surface and pulled out a bundle of color-coded cables. Feeling very out of place, Hicks took a close look at the four remaining stasis tubes, hoping he wouldn't see what he was sure would be there. Tubes number 1 and number 3 contained miniature facehugger eggs, and number 4 and number 5 held embryos. If there was even the tiniest shred of justice in the universe, Hicks thought, there would be a very special punishment for the company spooks who'd forced this experiment on the lab techs.
You ever figure these things out? He asked Bishop. I mean, their biology? Because I don't get them at all.
Bishop didn't answer. He had separated a yellow cable from the bundle and plugged it into the cradle, then looked from the flexi on his wrist to the stasis tubes.
Is that it? Hicks asked him. Will that kill them?
Bishop nodded without looking away from the tubes.
Then do it. Now.
The synthetic raised his arm slowly as if he was underwater or in a hypnotic trance.
I said do it, Hicks yelled. That's an order.
I can't, Bishop said. You'll have to destroy them. Hicks gaped at him.
Why? Because the UPP tampered with you?
No. Bishop's usual calm expression turned apologetic. My sensors have detected the presence of human material in the organisms. It's not much, just enough that I'm unable to harm them directly. Hicks shoved Bishop aside and had a look at the setup. In the panel compartment, he spotted a large, serious-looking red button beside the bundle of cables, and just above it a metal plate with the words, Stasis System Microwave Sterilization. Below it were smaller letters, Emergency Only. Hicks slammed his fist down on the button. As the nutrient inside the tubes began to boil, he stepped back from the workbench, dragging Bishop with him. Seconds later, the material in each tube blew apart, leaving ragged fragments that disintegrated in the still bubbling liquid. Alien goose overcooked. Mission accomplished, Hicks thought, although he wasn't completely relieved. Just plugging in a cable couldn't possibly be enough to kill these things. He was wondering how much time they had left when the alarm went off.
Guess we're done, Hicks turned to Bishop, who absurdly still had one arm raised. You might as well put both your arms up, he said, as the lab doors slid open and three Marines burst into the room, weapons raised. Don't you fucking move, Jack! Yelled the one on point.
Hicks had a sudden image of how they looked, standing at the workbench with four stasis tubes of boiling liquid like the Marines had come in while they were making tea, and Bishop holding his hand up like he wanted permission to explain what the fuck was going on. This was funnier than the cartoon duck. Hicks burst out laughing. The Marines marched them double time to the brig, in white medical restraints rather than the standard felony straps. Hicks was sure that had been the spook's idea. Normal procedure would have been to transfer him and Bishop to the custody of the Colonial Marines Criminal Investigation Unit for court-martial, where a guilty verdict would send him to a military prison, probably for life. But as a mentally ill prisoner, he could be held indefinitely and forced to undergo any kind of treatment deemed necessary, drugs, neurological conditioning, surgery, and administered by the company. The company might persuade the Marines Central Command that sabotaging cancer research deliberately and with malice aforethought robbed innocent people of the chance to benefit from new and better treatments and, in effect, caused their deaths. This was nothing less than mass murder on a planetary scale, on multiple planets. A crime so heinous, he had forfeited the right to due process. They could skip the court-martial and send him directly to a company facility where he'd be too drugged up to talk about weaponizing alien life forms. They took him and Bishop to separate cells so they couldn't conspire to escape, and although they removed the restraints, they left the white wrist cuffs in place so everyone would assume he and Bishop were criminally insane. All Hicks could think as he watched the Marines march away was how damned young they were, how untried, unseasoned, unscarred. They had no clue.